Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, sky watching the supermoon, the weird science of memory at parties, and the world's oldest known blood cells. Here's a scientist soundbite.
People went nuts, in fact, speculating over this idea that the supermoon had somehow caused the earthquake in Japan.
That's sky watcher Deborah Bird. More with her later, but first, science news of the week with Michael Brennan and Emily Howard.
NASA's Cassini spacecraft flew within 46 miles, or 74 kilometers, of Saturn's moon Enceladus on May 2nd. It was the last of three flybys for Cassini's radio science experiment. The radio science team was using this flyby to probe the internal structure of the south polar region of this moon of Saturn. This part of Enceladus has long fractures on its surface, and the Cassini spacecraft has seen jets of water ice, water vapor, and organic compounds spraying out from the fractures into space. Scientists are still trying to understand why and how this happens.
On April 29th, a rare tornado touched down near the city of Toulouse in southwestern France. It did not cause injuries or major destruction, but many people witnessed it and caught beautiful photographs of this natural event. You can see many of these photos at our website, that's earthsky.org. Just search for the words French tornado.
University of Warwick astrophysicists have caught four distant white dwarfs hundreds of light years away in the act of consuming Earth-like exoplanets. White dwarfs are more evolved stars than our sun, which will become a white dwarf billions of years from now. That's why these astronomers say that what they've observed in these distant white dwarfs could well be a snapshot of the very distant future of the Earth.
Globaya has released a short film titled Welcome to the Anthropocene, that is, the age of large-scale human influence on Earth. This three-minute film takes you through the last 250 years of human history, from the start of the Industrial Revolution in England around 1750 to the first Earth Summit held in Rio de Janeiro in June of 1992. The Planet Under Pressure Conference, held in London in March of 2012, commissioned the film. It's very beautiful and very powerful. And to see it, come to earthsky.org and search for the words human influence on Earth.
An annular eclipse of the sun, what many are calling the China to Texas eclipse, will take place on May 20th, according to U.S. clocks, and on May 21st, according to clocks and calendars in Asia. An annular eclipse is also called a ring eclipse. It happens when the moon passes directly in front of the sun, but is too far away in its orbit of Earth to cover the sun completely. Mark your calendars for this May 20th or 21st eclipse of the sun. We'll have more about it in upcoming programs. That's Science News of the Week. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard.
Song of the Week this week is by one of the biggest bands to come out of Austin in recent years. They've toured the globe and are highly respected for playing a big role in both the preservation and the resurgence of a certain rock sound. Here's Telephone by the Black Angels.
You never call my name. I try and call your phone, but you're never home.
Earth Sky broadcasts on over 1,200 stations worldwide, including Voice of America. Deborah Bird is here with news of the global night sky, what's being called a supermoon. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, Jorge. I don't know for sure that it's being called a supermoon, because this word supermoon is one that we in the world of astronomy never really heard until a year ago. So the word supermoon kind of erupted into the media shortly after the March 11th, 2011 major earthquake and tsunami in Japan. And, you know, a lot of people were tying this idea of a supermoon to the earthquake, and we can talk more about that later. But I just want to say that supermoon is not really a word that I had ever heard in my almost 40 years in astronomy until a year ago.
So what is a supermoon?
Well, actually, the word supermoon, as it turns out, was not coined by someone in astronomy. It was coined by an astrologer, a guy named Richard Knoll, and that's N-O-L-L-E. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And in 1979, he coined the word supermoon, and he said that a supermoon was a moon that was either new or full, so on a line with the Earth and Sun, which happens twice a month. But this particular type of moon would have to be within 90% of its point of closest to the Earth. So a new moon or a full moon, you've got the Sun, Earth, and Moon in a line, and the Moon is closest to Earth for that orbit of the Moon at the same time. So that's what this astrologer in 1979 called a supermoon.
Deborah, tell us about this supermoon for May of 2012.
Well, the supermoon of the month of May 2012 is happening on May 5th. So some of you will be hearing this on May 5th, and some of you will be hearing it after May 5th. And there are effects that we do know happen when the moon is a full moon or a new moon is closest to Earth that happen in the days after that event. And we're going to talk about that in a second. But May 5th, according to U.S. clocks, the moon will be full and it will be at its closest to Earth. And so astronomers call that closest point of the moon to Earth a perigee. So that's a particularly close full moon happening on May 5th, according to U.S. clocks, happening on May 6th, according to clocks and calendars in Asia, the Middle East, and Europe. That'll be a regular old full moon, as far as anybody can tell by looking up in the sky on either May 5th or May 6th. If you use very precise measuring instruments, you'll be able to see that the moon is, in fact, because it's at its closest to Earth, it is, in fact, larger in our sky than it would be otherwise. But whether anybody can detect that change with their eye, I don't know. You know, I mean, people argue about whether you can actually detect that or not. So that is the May 5th, May 6th supermoon, a full moon closest to Earth.
How rare is a supermoon, Deborah?
Well, in fact, it's not very rare at all. And according to Richard Knoll, who coined the word supermoon, there are 4 to 6 supermoons every year on the average. So this particular moon, this particular May 5th, 6th supermoon that's happening in 2012, it turns out that is the closest moon since 2011, March 19th of 2011. And that brings us back to this subject of the moon and earthquakes, because of course the big earthquake in Japan happened on March 11th, a week before that supermoon. And many, many, many people went nuts, in fact, speculating over this idea that the supermoon had somehow caused the earthquake in Japan.
Right, and there really isn't scientific evidence to support that. In fact, at earthsky.org, we have an article about what's true and false about this supermoon associated with the tsunami.
Yeah, there's absolutely no evidence at all. There's never been any kind of statistical study done showing that when the moon is on a line with the Earth and Sun and closest, that more earthquakes happen. That there's no study of that kind. It kind of makes sense that a moon that's on a line with the Earth and Sun and closest to Earth, you know, could affect something, because the moon causes watery tides on Earth, and the moon also causes tides in the solid body of Earth. So there's sort of some logic there, and maybe someday in the future, astronomers will be smart enough to figure out all the details of this and discover, lo and behold, there is something about the moon that causes earthquakes. But at the moment, there's no evidence for it of any kind. There's no data going back over, say, the past century showing that, you know, full moons that are closest cause earthquakes. I do want to point out that the March 11, 2011 earthquake and tsunami, the very great tragedy there that happened in Japan, actually happened a week before the supermoon. And there are many, many, many days of the month where the moon is at the distance that it was from Earth on March 11, 2011, and at the phase of the moon that it was on March 11, 2011. So there was nothing special about March 11, 2011, you know, that should have caused that earthquake.
But, yeah, if you're lucky enough to be near the coast, you might notice a bit of a high tide during this May 2012 supermoon.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying earlier. There are effects that occur after the supermoon that are very well documented and very well known and very familiar, in fact, to people who live along coastlines. So when the moon, of course, the tides rise and fall with the phase of the moon. And when the moon is full and also closest to Earth, you can expect particularly high tides, which are called spring tides. Then the word spring in that case doesn't mean the season of spring, but it has to do with a word that means to spring up or to leap up. And so in the days after the March 5th and 6th supermoon, people who live along the coast can expect these very high tides.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Earth Sky heard on 1,200 stations around the world. Ryan Britton joins us now to talk about his weekly Weird Science segment. Ryan, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
So today you have some weird science on partying.
And remembering.
Is this about drinking too much or what?
No, partying does involve libations, but this weird science has to do with just having fun. There are anecdotes about meeting the most perfect girl or guy at a party, and it's easy to remember that person's sense of humor or the gleam in their eye, but darn it, we forget their name or their phone number,
That's happened to me. Yeah, I know what you're talking
about. Yeah. So, well, two psychologists at the University of Missouri were able to quantify or scientifically observe this phenomenon. They studied 181 people, some they put into a good mood with comedy, with some Jerry Seinfeld skits, and some they bored to tears with instructional videos. Well, then participants were asked to remember certain numbers, and those in a good mood scored worse than those not necessarily in a good mood. So humans can't remember specific details as well when we are in a good mood.
Wow. So I guess there's evidence that happiness and memory don't mix so well sometimes.
Exactly. Researchers, they also tested people's ability to focus. And happy people and not so happy people scored the same. So when you're at a party searching for a mate, so to speak, both groups have the ability to focus on a certain person or someone that looks interesting. So you've got the focus. So what I recommend is that when you're going to a party, you bring a notebook and take copious notes as you talk to somebody else.
That sounds very nerd-like.
And I'm really not recommending that. I'd say, you know, have a good time so you don't remember as much. It's okay. You know, let's go party. But, you know, it's kind of weird. It's kind of interesting.
So don't have a good time at a party to remember it.
Exactly.
Where can people find out more about this study?
Well, Time.com has a great synopsis of the studies, and those studies are available in detail at the American Psychological Association, and that address is psychnet.apa.org.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.
Earth Sky's Ryan Britton, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're Earth Sky. We interview the world's top scientists. A 5,300-year-old mummy has turned up what scientists are calling the world's oldest known red blood cells. That's according to research published in Interface by the Journal of the Royal Society. The article is called Preservation of 5,300-Year-Old Red Blood Cells in the Iceman. The Iceman is an exquisitely preserved mummy discovered in 1991 frozen in a glacier. It was found by two hikers in the Ahrtal Alps along the border of Austria and Italy. Since then, scientists have analyzed the Iceman for clues of how he lived and how he died, apparently shot by an arrow in the back. This new study in May of 2012 claims to have found evidence of intact red blood cells, the oldest yet known. On the line to talk more about the findings is Marek Janko, a professor of material sciences at the Center for Nanosciences in Munich, Germany. Mr. Janko, welcome.
Hello.
What are the main findings of your study of what's being described as the world's oldest known blood cells?
Well, our main finding is that red blood cells can be preserved for 5,300 years and even detected after such a long time.
I mean, this is an amazing announcement. How were the blood cells recognizable? I mean, how did you know you had red blood cells on this mummy that's 5,300 years old? What's the evidence? Tell us more.
Okay, so the idea was, first of all, to collect samples, which means tissue, from the mummy wounds. And the Iceman is known for several reasons, because the mummy is extremely well preserved, but also because it seems to be the oldest known victim of a violent death in history. And it is also known that the mummy shows several wounds, for example, one at his right hand and another one on his back where an arrow had entered and presumably killed him. And knowing this, we tried to extract some samples from this wound tissue and used the so-called atomic force microscope, in short AFM, in order to really have a three-dimensional image of the particles with really high resolutions, having particles with the right size, the right shape, and the right structure, we then carried on so-called Raman spectroscopy measurements, and with this we then really could determine the molecular fingerprint of the particles, showing that we are really dealing with red blood cells.
Yeah, I just was hoping you might be able to give us an overview of why scientists are doing this. Why are scientists looking at these remains, such as of the Iceman?
Sure. Okay, so those remains can really give us some information about our ancestors, not only telling us what people used to eat in former times, but even what type of, for example, disease they had. And those information can even bring us further or improve our knowledge, not only about the diseases, but make it possible, for example, to create some medicines, some drugs against different types of disease. By knowing how they evolved, what type of evolution they went through.
Were there any new clues as to what killed this Iceman?
Okay, so by analyzing the red blood cells, if somebody is injured, somebody cuts himself or whatever, a blood clot is created around this wound in order to stop the blood loss. But after a while, the fibrin as well as the blood clot are degraded and the tissue is just normally repaired. Due to this time difference, we were able to distinguish between the younger wound and the older wound. And because of the finding of fibrin, and fibrin is a characteristic protein for the coagulation of blood, we are pretty sure that the arrowhead wound was, let's say, the last or one of the last wounds he suffered from.
What's the most important thing you want people today to know about this new evidence of the world's oldest known blood cells?
Well, I think it's as basic as it could be, that red blood cells can be preserved after 5,300 years, and that science is, let's say, good enough to identify them, even after such a long period of time.
You've been listening to material scientist Marek Janko. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at Earth Sky Studio B in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much art, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age. But what we don't know...